Hey there. Thanks for listening to the Three Creeks Church podcast. Today's message comes from the book of Mark. The book of Mark tells the story of the life and impact of Jesus of Nazareth, the most influential human in the history of the world. It's our hope that through this message, you'll be able to either find God or follow him more closely. For more information about our church, to join a summer collective, attend a service, or to give online, visit threecreekschurch.com.
Well, good morning, Three Creeks. My name is Joel, and I get to be the pastor here, and this is my favorite church in the whole world. And I'm just a minute ago, I was sitting down here and just thinking about all the different people that have contributed even today to just to help us do this. And then Lydia and Madeline come up and talk about going to other places in the world. Alex is in the back running the show on the lights. Come on, somebody. Give it up for Alex. Somebody behind the curtain over here, Matt Brayman. He can't hear you or see you, or he can hear you. So clap for him real quick. He's back here. And it's just, oh man, Erica, and there was like a team of 20 people getting everything set up this morning, and I just feel very, very blessed. This is my favorite church in the world. We are in the Gospel of Mark. We've been here for 7 weeks. This will be our 8th week. We're in chapter 8. And I will say this, wherever you're at on your spiritual journey, and you're on one, we're really glad that you're here this morning. A lot of times when I give the message, I try to make it apply to your life, whether you've been following Jesus for 30 years or this is your first 30 minutes in church in your life. No matter where you're at, I try to give you something to chew on, something to think about. And so today, I think, you know, our vision as a church is to help people to find and follow God. And so if you're in the process of finding out who God is, we're glad you're here. If you have found God, you have a relationship with him, and you're trying to follow him, I'm glad you're here. Today probably, I think, leans more towards the person who has made a decision to follow Christ. I think if you would say, yes, I'm a Christian, I've made that decision, I'm in, then I think that this message is mostly for you. But I think that no matter where you're at, even if you're coming in, you're curious, checking things out. In fact, I would say, if you're on the fence, maybe this is even more for you. Maybe as this message plays out, maybe you'll go, that is exactly what I needed to hear today. You know that, for those of you that have kids, you know that those moments when you're like, ooh, I'm going to have to correct here. I'm going to have to maybe discipline's the word, or I don't know if you're, I'm not going to get into the whole spanking debate publicly, but you know that those moments, for those of you that have kids, you have these moments where you're like, I'm going to have to offer some correction here, some truth that they are not going to want to hear or experience. But as a parent, you want them to see through that. You want them to see your love through that. And you kind of hope for that like hug and conversation afterwards, right? You kind of hope for that. Well, today I've already set up the hug and the conversation afterwards. It's outside. It has pepperoni on it. And his water's flowing down my hug and conversation. So this is gonna feel a little bit like correction, and I feel like I can give it because I feel like God through this text has been correcting me this week. So I'm just gonna kind of give to you what God has been given to me through Mark chapter 8. Let me just start off with a really simple question, but one that I think would warrant multiple minutes of thought to actually come up with your answer. It's not a quick one. Here's the question. This is a question for the person who says that they're a Jesus follower. If you weren't a Christian, how would you be living differently? If you were not a Christian, if you did not claim Christ and you were not a Jesus follower, how would you be living differently? In other words, what difference is being a follower of Jesus making in your life? What noticeable differences is that making in your life? Would you be doing anything differently if you weren't a Christian? And maybe my follow-up question is that easy to figure out, or is that kind of hard to answer? Are you quick to be able to identify a lot of ways in which you are living differently because you follow Jesus, or do you got to dig a little bit to figure out the answer to that question. I want to take you on an imaginary road trip with the disciples today. Jesus took them on this field trip. He obviously didn't ride in a car, but it was a field trip with Jesus. And I want us to insert ourselves into this story in Mark chapter 8. Jesus takes the disciples somewhere he's never taken them before, further away than he's used to taking them. And I want us to kind of insert ourselves into the story and imagine what it would have been like when Jesus does what he does in Mark 8. Mark 8 is in the middle of the book, right? There's 16 chapters, 8's halfway through. Not only is it halfway through in the number sequence, but this is the turning point in the life of Jesus. This is the turning point. Everything up until this point, it almost seems like Jesus is wandering around doing miracles with no apparent purpose. But in Mark 8, everything changes. From this point forward, he is going to Jerusalem with a very specific purpose. Mark 8, this story right here, is the turning point in the life of Jesus. And so I want us to insert ourselves into the story and imagine being in this group with the disciples. If you've got Bibles, go ahead and open them or turn them on. This story is a two-parter, so I'm going to read the first four verses. We're going to start in verse 27. I'm going to read the first four verses, and then we'll pause. I'll explain why that's important, and then we'll read the second part, and that way you can be prepared for where we're heading today. Mark chapter 8, verse 27 says this. Jesus and his disciples left Galilee, and they went up to villages near Caesarea Philippi. And as they were walking along, he asks them, "Who do people say that I am?" "Well," they replied, "some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, others say you're one of the prophets." And then he asked them, "Well, who do you say that I am?" And Peter replied, "You are the Messiah." But Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. Okay, so for 7.5 chapters, Jesus has been crisscrossing the Sea of Galilee, right? He's been doing miracles kind of in either on the west side of the Sea of Galilee where all the Jews live. He'd cross over to the east side, but he's kind of staying in that general region. And then he goes where? He goes to Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea Philippi is 15 miles straight to the north, and it's a Roman stronghold. It's a spiritually dark place. This is where Herod Philip, one of the leaders of Rome, named Caesarea Philippi after himself. And it is a center for cult worship. It's not a Jewish place. It's not a place where they're waiting for the Messiah. This is a center for cult worship. It's a dark place. Have you ever in your life been to a place where you felt that it was spiritually dark? You just felt something different on you when you were in that place. This was Caesarea Philippi. It's famous at the time for its sanctuary to the half-man, half-goat god named Pan. And I actually got to go to Caesarea Philippi a couple years ago, and there's a place where it's almost like there's this rock wall cliff. Like if you were a rock climber, you would love this spot. And there's this wall, and then over in to the left side, there's this cave, and it's Pan's Grotto. I don't even know what grotto means, to be honest with you, but I know that what this place was viewed at the time as that these were the gates of hell. These were the gates of Hades. Cult worship, bestiality, child sacrifice, all these things. This was a very, very dark place that Jesus is taking the disciples on this trip. It's like it's a 1.5 day journey maybe up there. They had to walk there probably, most likely. And if you think about it from the disciples' perspective, man, they're living the dream with Jesus for a while. They're crossing the Sea of Galilee. Jesus is calming the waves. You need bread, you need fish. He pulls it out. You know, it's going well for the disciples. And Jesus says, "Get in the van, we're going north." "Okay, where are we going?" They hop in and they drive, and Jesus takes them to the red lights district, to Sin City, to the place that good Jews don't go. to Caesarea Philippi. And then when he gets there, he asks them, who do people say that I am? Who do people say that I am? And it's not like Jesus didn't already know the answer. He already knew what people were saying about him. He doesn't have this twisted dependence, like wondering, what do people think about me? He asks that question to set up the next question, because when they say John the Baptist or Elijah or one of the other prophets, Jesus says, well, what about you? Who do you say that I am? And it's like, dun, dun, dun. You know, they're all of a sudden, they're in the hot seat. It was easy to talk about what other people said about him. But Jesus goes, well, what do you say? And big, bold Peter says, you are the Messiah. And this conversation hasn't happened yet. Jesus has just been hinting heavily so far that he's the Messiah, but he's never really confirmed it so explicitly, because Jesus nods. And Mark doesn't tell us exactly what Jesus said, but Matthew does. Matthew says, Jesus replied in Matthew chapter 16, you are blessed, Simon, son of John. This is another name for Peter. Because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You didn't learn this from any human being. God showed you this. So when Peter stands up and says, you're the Messiah, you're the one that we were waiting for, you're the Savior, you are God in the flesh, and Jesus goes, you're right. You're right. And again, let's just put ourselves for a second in the shoes of the disciples. In one sense, probably relief. Like, whew, okay, I am so glad we were right about that, you know? Like, what if he wasn't? What if he goes, no, try again? Like, that's a really different conversation. So in some sense, Peter goes, you're the Messiah? And Jesus is like, yes. They're like, yes. Like, a little bit of relief. We gave up our lives and families for this. So that is good that he is who we said that we thought that he was. I imagine that there's a sense of awe. Jesus took him to the darkest place in the world at the time to show how bright the light of the Messiah would be. I imagine that they're in the presence of God, and so I imagine there's a sense of awe, and I also imagine that there's a sense of excitement among them, because they're like, oh, well, then let's get this show on the road. The Messiah is going to be the triumphant one. This is, and we're on the inner circle. We believed in him, and we nailed it. Let's get this show on the road. They're kind of eager to get this thing going, and here's part two. Jesus goes, then Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man, he must suffer many terrible things and be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but 3 days later he would rise from the dead. What? You just said you were the Messiah, like you're God. We saw you take two pieces of fish, or I don't know, what, couple fish, couple breads, and feed 50. What are you talking about? You're going to be killed. The narrative of the Messiah is that you're going to be the king that rescues us. Look at what Peter does. Big bold Peter. He got the first one right. And so he's kind of booming with some confidence. And so he feels the audacity to reprimand Jesus. Look what he does. As Jesus talked openly about this, meaning that he was talking clearly and confidently. This wasn't in a parable. Jesus is saying explicitly what is going to happen. Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. Jesus, you can't say stuff like this. People aren't going to follow you. And Jesus turned around and looked at his disciples and then reprimanded Peter and said, get away from me, Satan. He calls Peter Satan. He said, you see things from a human point of view, not from God's. Now, obviously, Peter in this moment is not demonic or satanic. Peter is the closest follower of Jesus. He just said, you are the Messiah. But the rescue plan to save everybody in the world, that's what Jesus is describing. And so anyone who's going to oppose that is going to be That is going to be an enemy of God. Not Peter, but his answer. He's saying, don't say such things. The rescue plan for all mankind is now in motion, and so get behind me. Anything that's trying to stop me, get behind me. Jesus, you are seeing things from a mere human point of view, not from God's. Peter's thinking from a human point of view that the Messiah can't die. That's unthinkable. But God's point of view is that the Messiah has to die, and that's inevitable. Someone has to pay for sin. Someone's got to do it. And so this is an inevitable reality. This is God's point of view. Then, and I kind of want to camp on this the rest of the time together. Verse 34. Then, calling the crowd to join the disciples. So apparently there were some people that were, 50 or 100 yards away waiting to be called in. Seems like this first conversation was just the disciples. And then Jesus says, okay, everybody else, come here, bring it in. So people kind of mosey over and they want to know what Jesus is going to say. Calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. Take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but you lose your soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? So the disciples' heads, they've got to be just spinning because they finally nailed it. He's the Messiah. What things are trending up? This is going to work out for us. And then Jesus says, if you want to be my follower, you got to give up your own way. What comes naturally to you, you put that aside. You give up your own way, and then you have to pick up your cross, and you have to follow me. Now, a cross, to you and I, it's a kind of a symbol of Jesus. When I say the word cross, we just sang songs recently called Hallelujah for the Cross. It's this nice symbol. Some of us are wearing a cross necklace right now, or cross earrings. Some of you edgier people have a cross tattoo. You know who you are. A cross is this symbol of Jesus, but at the time when Jesus said, pick up your cross, the cross is an instrument of torture when Jesus said it. It's like Jesus saying, like, I'm going to the electric chair and you have to be willing to be next. It's not this pretty picture. Jesus is saying, you've got to be willing to die for this. And the other thing he says, if you try to hang on to your life, you're going to lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the good news, you will save it. So first he says, you have to be willing, if you're going to be my follower, if you're going to be a follower of Jesus, so this is the part where if you're, at the beginning of this message when I said, hey, if you would say that you're a Christian, if you would raise your hand and say, like, yes, I'm in, this is the part for you. If you want to be my follower, you've got to give up your own way. That means that the way that you want to go, you've got to be willing to give that up. What comes naturally to you, you have to be willing to lay that aside. You've got to give up your own way, meaning your life from this point forward is going to look different than it would if you were not my follower. Remember the question I asked at the beginning? If you're not a Christian, how would you be living differently? There needs to be a clear answer to that question. If you're going to follow me and you give up your own way, there's going to be a noticeable gap between who you would be without Jesus and who you are in following Jesus. You have to give up your own way. And Jesus says, I want you to know, it's not going to be easy. It's going to feel like you're losing your life. You track with me? Like, it's going to feel like you're giving up who you are. It's going to feel very unnatural to you. You're going to feel like you are losing your life, but you're actually going to save it. You're actually going to save it. And if you choose to do this, if you lose your life for my sake and for the gospel, you will save your soul. You will save your soul. This is not going to be easy, but you've got to understand, if you're going to be my follower, you have to give up your own way. You're going to look different than you would. Let me ask those same questions that I asked earlier and give you a second to think about it. If you weren't a Christian, how would you be living differently? In other words, is being a follower of Jesus, is it making a real difference in your life? Would you be doing anything differently if you weren't a Christian? And I'll expound on what I hinted at a little bit earlier, is that if that question is difficult to answer, that I think would reveal that there might not be a big difference. I'm not sure if I'm willing to put that in cement, but you with me? Like if there were, you know, if you were easily being able to identify, well, this would be different and this would be different and this would be different, well, then that would say that your life is significantly different. But if you got to dig to come up with some stuff, I'm not sure that it's making a big difference. I think someone who's been following Jesus for a long time, and this is where, for me, just in studying this, I had to go, well, I kind of have the perk of being a pastor, so I probably wouldn't do this. You know, like, my job is this. So I would change jobs. So got one, at least, you know. And you don't have that necessarily, but I began to think about other things. Like, what would I be doing differently if I didn't follow Jesus? And it took me a minute to think about that. Maybe we in this room, if you would say you're a Christian or a Christ follower, maybe we act a little bit more like the disciples than we want to. Like, we're quick to say, yeah, I believe in Jesus. He's a Messiah. He's a Savior. He's God. I'm in. I'm excited. And I go to church. But then we're kind of taken back, or we're kind of shocked or surprised whenever someone suggests that we ought to change some of the things that we're doing. Well, don't judge me. Don't put that on me. I feel that way sometimes. But the beauty of going through the Bible kind of one chapter at a time is that you would probably call me out if I skipped chapter 8, right? If I was like, hey, Trevor, great job on Mark 7, and today Mark 9. You'd be like, what's an 8? So I'm telling you that being a follower of Jesus requires you to give up your own way. It requires you to change. And if that's shocking or jarring, I don't know what to tell you. That's what Jesus said. It requires you to give up your own way. It's going to feel like you are losing your life. So a really deep and hard question is, in following Christ, have you ever felt like you're losing your life? Because Jesus, he's really not interested in being this add-on to your life. He's really not interested in being a percentage of your life. He really isn't interested in, like, yes, we're back in church, but that's it. Jesus is interested in transforming all of your life. When you read verses about what happens to people when they give their life to Jesus, it says things like, the old is dead and gone, and the new has come, you're a new creation. And so Jesus is not interested in, like, just riding along for you and who you are. He's interested in changing and transforming who you are. And at times it's going to feel like you're losing your life, but in the end you will get the rich and satisfying life to the full, as John says in chapter 10. So, let me close with this. With Jesus, in this moment, to these disciples, to these other people, he just reveals that he's God. He says, you got to give up your own way. And that would be, that is very countercultural, and it's very not natural. It's very different. It's very different. But what that means for people who follow Jesus is that there is a noticeable difference in a few of these categories. There's a noticeable difference in how we do our work, in how we lead our businesses, and how we lead people. There's a gap between who we are and who we would be if we did not follow Jesus. There's a noticeable difference in how we are married to our spouse. We serve and give and protect differently than someone who doesn't know Jesus. There's a noticeable difference in how we parent. If you would parent how you're parenting, whether or not you knew Jesus or not, there should be a gap. There should be a gap between who we would be and who Jesus is making us to be. In how we date, in how we speak to people, in how we speak about people, in how we spend Sunday mornings, and how we spend Friday nights, and how we attend bachelor parties, and how we attend weddings. In all of these ways that we go about living our lives, Jesus is saying, you have to be willing to give up your own way, the way that everybody else might be doing it, the way that you probably want to do it because you don't want to stand out. You have to be willing to give that up, and there's a gap between who you are before me and now who you are because of me. I've transformed you. And I get it because I have this feeling, and even as I mention some of these things, I have this internal feeling where maybe something comes to my mind. Maybe, trying to think of an example, but maybe you can think of one and insert this feeling into your example, but this feeling of like, well, but I don't want to be that different. Like, I don't know if I'm comfortable standing out that much. I don't want to be that guy. The guy that goes to the bachelor party and doesn't do what everybody else is doing. I don't know if I want to be that guy. I don't know if I want to be that girl. And in Mark chapter 8, Jesus is saying, that's exactly who I want you to be. I want you to be different. If you want to be my follower, you've got to give up your own way. You've got to pick up your cross and you've got to follow me. And it's going to feel like you're losing your life, but in the end, you will gain it. You will find it. You will save your soul. You will save your soul. Let me close with one final observation on verse 31, which we read a while ago. It's the verse that Peter was all hot and bothered about when Jesus said, the Son of Man is going to be killed. He's going to be killed by all these people that you were respecting, the teachers and the scribes, all the good people, all the religious people are actually going to be the ones that kill him. I want to bring up just one final observation and let you think about it during our reflection time. In verse 31, it says, Jesus began to tell them that the Son of Man must suffer many terrible things. He must suffer many terrible things. These are the words of Jesus. The Son of Man isn't thinking about suffering many things. He's not considering whether or not he might have to suffer many things. It doesn't hang in the balance. Jesus himself, in describing himself, in describing the future of his life, says that the Son of Man, he must suffer many terrible things. Why did Jesus say that he must do this? Jesus said that he must do this. I have to do this. It is in my nature to do this. I cannot not do this. Like, I must do this. It's because in his nature, Jesus is love. He doesn't just love people. He is love. He can't not love people. And so Jesus, knowing that this right here, that right there, is a part of the rescue plan to go and rescue people unto himself. If Jesus doesn't go through with that, then we're all in trouble because our sins haven't been paid for yet. And Jesus goes, I must do it because I love them so much. I cannot leave them where they are. I have to provide a way back to the Father, and so I must. I must do this because my love for them, it is indescribable and it's who I am, and so I must do it. This is the heart of Jesus for us. He didn't think about it. He goes, I got to do it. And then the part when he gathered the crowd, he said, you must give up your own way. Pick up your cross and follow me. And so in the same way, I'm just suggesting to you, I'm just putting out this up in front of you, like what I'm talking about today, it really isn't an option. It's not something for you to go home and consider, should I do that or not? Because when you look at the example of Jesus, he goes, I must because I love them. And I would hope that our response as people that follow Jesus would go, well, then I must because I love him. I must do this. I must give up my own way. I must be different. I must take up my cross. I must feel like I'm losing my life so that I can gain it. Let me just give you two reflection questions here at the end. We've been doing this in this series, and I just think it's been great. And so I hope that you like this part two. Here's question number one. If you weren't a Christian, how would you be living differently? And the second one is, are there any of your own ways that you must give up? And I'll let you just chew on that, and the band will come up here in a minute, and we'll sing a song together.
Thanks for listening. For more information about our church, our weekly services, joining a group or a team, or to give online, visit 3creekschurch.com.